Big D Entertainment presents the Dave Holly Hour. Brought to you by Dazzle Shows Presents, The Vaudies, and Dipsy Doodle Productions. He's a variety entertainer, a former broadcaster and columnist, a true lover of arts, entertainment, good food, and fun times, including an occasional Jack Daniels. Okay, so a few Jack Daniels. Here he is, Dave Holly.
Happy weekend eve, everybody. Yes, a Thursday is here once again, and time for another episode. It's episode 36 now of the Dave Holly Hour. I'm Dave Holly. Thanks for joining me. We are here to talk Sioux Empire Arts and Entertainment. Sioux Empire Arts and Entertainment Conversations, a great conversation with Matt and Amy Morrison. That's what's on deck for you coming up in a few minutes, because they are two white squares. We'll let you know how they came up with that name, as well as tell you everything that they are involved in, including a virtual show that's coming up in just a few days. It's exciting, and it's going to be fun, and you'll think of one of the other things that I do, Santa Claus. In the meantime, thanks to our sponsors that we have here on the Dave Holly Hour. We, of course, have the wonderful people at the Sky Lounge in T, South Dakota, where I will be Friday night hosting Harry Potter trivia. And we have XO Chiropractic. They're the guys that keep me straight. My spine is in line, thanks to them. And they've been working on my hips a lot, too. I did something the other day. As many of you know, I have had some knee surgeries. I've had a hip replacement. I have had several surgeries, including an amputation on a toe. And the other day, they've been doing such a great job at XL Chiropractic, I ran just a little bit. Not even 25 yards. But it was just like, I think I can actually do it after all these years. And I finally was able to do that. And we also need to say thank you to Quality Nails. They make sure that Miss Carries, my wife, the executive administrator that I have a thing going on with, that she looks great on her fingernails and her toenails. They also do the same for me. Yeah, that's right. Because when you only have 9 toes, you want to make sure that they're in good shape. So they take care of me there too. And this week we add another sponsor. You hear me talk about them all the time, and basically I told you last week that they were going to become a sponsor because it's Books and Brews, Pizzeria LLC, and the speakeasy that they have going on there. Been spending some time there because of the great pizza, and you are now going to have a chance to win pizza with a podcaster. Make sure you listen for more details on that throughout the show. Now, for those of you that are regular listeners, you know the drill. First of all, I got to tell you, yes, I'm having some Jasper Newton. For those that are not regular listeners and saying, what the hell is Jasper Newton? That's the actual first and middle name of better known as John Daniels. Yeah, John Daniels, Diet Coke with a lime. That means I'm ready to have a good time, and I hope you are too. But the other thing regular listeners know about is we give a shout-out every week to something or someone or some people, perhaps, that have given me some hope in life. They've made me chuckle, laugh, guffaw, or perhaps go, huh, wow, wasn't that kind of cool? Or maybe even shed a tear of happiness. And it's called Honorable Mention. Oh my goodness, a tight race for honorable mention this week. Let me tell you, I had so many things that I could have chosen from and people, because here's what happened. Going into the weekend, Friday night, we ended up going to Oh So Good in Garrettson. First time for many of us, but the guru, Graham, the Grahamster, has always been wanting us to all go along, although the rest of the unpaid staff here at the Dave Holly Hour. So we finally get up there. Well, Thursday night, we'd been to the Barrel House, and our buddy, Boston Steve, was playing with Victor Faini. And Friday night, We go to Oh So Good, and unbeknownst to any of us, Boston Steve is there this time playing with Dan Haygood. So that was excellent. So I was thinking, you know, that's a possibility. Just that little quinky-dink could be this week's honorable mention. But no. Then Saturday rolls around, and I was officiating a wedding in Hartford, just north of Hartford there. Yeah, it's another little thing that I do for a side gig, because aren't we in what they call the gig economy now? So I did that. Well, on the way back, the missus and I stop at 38 Roadhouse. I've been wanting to stop at that place for like 15 to 20 years. So we finally did. Now it's beer only. So, of course, I'm, you know, kind of out right there. But I did have a couple of beers. And my wife actually won a free beer on the Shake-A-Day. So, okay, that's kind of cool. Heading back into the town. And I said, and actually, Carrie had brought it up a little bit earlier about possibly heading over to Chasers. We hadn't been there in years, literally, and feel so bad about it. Because used to go there fairly regularly, but then, you know, got a different job, so we didn't have lunches there, which was always great because, man, they make a good burger and so forth. But anywho, we decide to stop at Chasers, knowing that, you know, there would be some Jasper Dutton. So, walk in the door. Of course, it's, you know, a little dark lit. And as I'm walking, I hear, "Hey, Dave, haven't seen you in a while." Turn around, Judy Swearingen, the owner of Chasers. And what was so cool is, first of all, recognizing me after all this time from the back. No? And I had a hat on, and so it was great to catch up with her and found a new place of a new karaoke provider, Cripple Creek Karaoke, and we had an enjoyable time, and sure enough, as we're there, people that we karaoke'd with earlier in the week end up there. Big Steve ends up there, and Carl ends up there. It's like, wow, all these things. Well, then we settle down on Sunday. Monday, we go to Woodgrain. It's the first open mic for our local comedians to get back in shape, bring out some new stuff if they worked on it, polish up some old stuff, and of course, just be in front of a live audience for the first time in many, many weeks. And during that time, Nathan Holtz, who is from Boss's Comedy Club, he's chief cook and bottle wash there, and he's also an incredible stand-up comedian, he knocked it out of the park as though it was the bottom of the ninth inning, and he needed a grand slam to win it. Phenomenal. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, you know, at first just thinking, boy, this is great, because they had a good crowd there, really good crowd for an open mic. And so it's like, okay, that could be this week's honorable mention. Then when Nathan had his performance, it's like, nope, that's kind of the clubhouse leader now. Well, then Tuesday rolls around. And the great news for me on Tuesday was the Major League Baseball announcement that they will at least have some sort of a season this year, starting July 23rd or 24th for the opening games. So that made me think, you know, it's possible Major League Baseball could be this week's honorable mention. But then Tuesday night, we are at our friends at Books and Brews again. And don't forget, keep listening throughout the show as to how you might win pizza with a podcaster. Well, we're there to karaoke at the request of yet another of the unpaid staff members of the Dave Holly Hour. That would be Miss Melissa's. She is like number one promoter. She's sung on a couple of things for us. She's a great karaokeer. So she wanted to go karaokeing on the eve of her birthday. So yesterday, Wednesday, was her birthday. But Tuesday night, she wanted to go out because that's the night that they have karaoke at Books and Brews. And, of course, the regulars that we've gotten to know in the little karaoke clutch show up. Well, there's also a pretty decent crowd there that night. And in the back, there's a couple of guys, younger middle age, I would put them at. And Carrie and Melissa had taken cupcakes and so forth to them because, you know, we had treats there for Melissa's birthday. And it's also Graham's birthday coming up here in just a little bit. Graham the guru. And his birthday is Friday. And don't forget, Friday night, I am at Sky Lounge hosting Harry Potter trivia. Anywho, back to Tuesday night then. So my wife says, you know, why don't you go give a couple of your podcast cards to those guys sitting back there? They just seem like nice guys. I said, okay, sure. So I go back there, introduce myself, and start chit-chatting. They're from West Virginia. I should say they were from West Virginia. They were in Sioux Falls as they're traveling cross-country going to Portland, or at least Oregon. I can't remember if it was Portland specifically. Two of the nicest, sweetest gentlemen you could ever meet. And one of them even took part in karaoke. And guess what he sang? Country Roads, West Virginia. And so those two guys, then as they left, stopped by and told the table, you guys have a great community here. And they were so enthralled with everything. And so I had told them back when I gave them the cards, I said, you know what? You know, obviously it's not going to matter to you guys if you're moving out to Oregon to listen about Sioux Empire Arts and Entertainment, but you're getting kind of a fun shot at it tonight. And you could tell it was genuine. They were just happy as could be that they had stopped and taken in some of the local nightlife. So, the two guys that I can't remember the names, but I told them to write in, and they are this week's winners of the coveted honorable mention. All right, when we come back, Matt and Amy Morrison, the two white squares, on the Dave Holly Hour.
Sure, they have darts, and you've heard me talk about how ruggedly handsome the trivia host is, but all caps fun never stops at the Sky Lounge and Tea. And fun is best had with your friends enjoying live entertainment, as in live and local. Yeah, the Sky Lounge believes in giving you the best bands, solo artists, and comedians from the area. The Neo Johnsons, Elizabeth Hunstead, Skylar Volks, as well as many others. And a great staff will make sure you enjoy your fun at the Sky Lounge in T, South Dakota.
With him, every day is a holy day. Once again, here is Dave Holly.
Happy weekend, Eve, everybody. Thursdays are always so fun here in the Sioux Empire because a lot of things get going at the weekend. And there's many things you can take in. Some places getting back to having some live performances, which is incredible. It's fantastic. I know last weekend, the wife and I and the rest of the unpaid staff here at the Dave Holly Hour went out and got involved and saw some shows, had some fun. And these two people that are on with me now, they are fun persona. First of all, he wears a mustache like nobody else in town can. And she is the cutest little thing to put on vintage clothing that you have ever seen. Amy and Matt Morrison, great to have you here today.
Thanks so much
for having us.
Yeah, and you guys are going to be a part of a yet another virtual show. We've had to resort to quite a few of that recently because of the pandemic. And but it's something that you two are very familiar with anyway because you've both been in past productions from the Goodnight Theater Collective, which we talk about many times here because it's just so awesome. But we have Christmas in July coming up, the 1st of July. Tell us about that. Go ahead. I'll let you start, Amy.
Well, we really just know what we're doing, but from what I understand, it's a whole variety show. So it's not just singing this time. There's a lot of our actor friends are involved with this as well, which is fun. We were given two, what do you call them? You say it.
Public domain.
That's the words. We were given two songs that were public domain, so we didn't have to worry about copyright. Because
yeah.
That's always a big deal. So we are doing our own take on Deck the Halls and Jingle Bells.
Okay. And what does an own take from you two mean?
It can mean soup to nuts.
Yeah, okay.
Usually when we play, we have a two-person multi-instrumental group called Two White Squares, and we play a lot of random things with a lot of random instruments. We pretty much listen to a song, try to figure out how we can put our own kind of little flavor to it, and so it can range anywhere from acoustic guitar and keyboard stuff to ukulele and accordion and everything in between. And so with this one, it was a matter of trying to figure out, you know, with two songs that really can have a very similar vibe, it's like, how do we differentiate these two things? And so one is a little more straightforward with a little bit of lighthearted banter in between. And the other one, we grabbed most of the instruments in our house, and at some point or another, they got played on that track.
Yep.
Most of the instruments.
Yeah.
And how many do we have?
Boy, I wouldn't even hazard a guess on the number, but Amy plays all kinds of keyboard instruments, so she's got not only grand piano, keyboard, harmonium, which is a little pump organ, hand pump organ kind of deal, a couple of accordions. She plays bassoon as well, which did not make an appearance on that particular song. And then I play a lot of different stringed instruments, so we've got on that track ukulele. I just acquired a banjo. So there's some mm-hmm. very straightforward banjo playing on there. But I also have a couple of guitars and play bass, and I was actually a trumpet major, so had to finally bust that back out and play a little trumpet and added some trombone and tuba.
And you're a brass band in
yeah.
this one. It's great fun. We gave it sort of a New Orleans drag vibe. It's really fun. Yeah.
So how did we have collaboration between a married couple that's musical?
We have been making music together since we were in middle school.
No kidding.
Yep. When we think back to it, we don't remember when we met. We grew up in the same small town mm-hmm. in Sheldon, Iowa.
Orabs.
And yes, we are Orabs.
Orange and black.
That's right. Yep. And I'm a year older than Matt in school.
I was not going to divulge that.
Yeah.
Smart man.
Yeah. And so we were in the same middle school jazz band. I played the piano and Matt played trumpet. And then we were in the same marching band. And eventually we started dating and we've been making music together forever. He followed me to college and we've been making music together for a long time. So,
and where was college in?
We went to University of South Dakota. Both of us music majors.
Good musical school, yeah.
Yeah.
No
yeah.
doubt about that.
Yeah.
And especially at Sea Vermilion, the home of the National Music Museum.
That's right.
That's
yeah.
Spent a lot of time there mm-hmm. in our time there.
In fact, the great thing about a podcast, first of all, is we get a lot more time to talk to you than, you know, 2 or 3 minutes if you're on the radio. But also, the rails come off quite often, so we'll do a little sidebar here.
Sure.
So did some of the instruments in there inspire you to pick up others? Mm-hmm. Or did you see one there and go, gotta have it?
Well, for me, I was really, when I was in college, very focused on trumpet. I was doing trumpet and voice, and that was pretty much it. But I was an instrumental music ed major, so I had to take all of the methods classes mm-hmm. and learn to at least dabble with about everything. But it really wasn't until after college that I really started to begin branching out into other instruments. Somewhat out of necessity, because we were serving a church as worship leaders out in Indiana, and we had a good number of musicians, but there were always those gaps, those holes that we had to fill. And so I, a lot of times, if we had a need, I went ahead and quickly learned the basics on an instrument just to fill that gap until we were able to find someone else.
In college, I actually played more instruments than he did because I was a voice major, but I did theater and I played in the band and the orchestra. I played flute and bassoon. I did not pick up cello until later in life. That's a learning experience, cello. I'm terrible. And I played piano and a legitimate piano player, would have probably double majored in voice and piano, but I had a kind of a crushing blow experience as a senior in high school with my piano contest.
Oh.
And, you know, just it was.
Was it guild?
Guild is the one I did well with. It
okay.
was state piano contest oh, that my. I got a 3, and it was so embarrassing.
No.
I about died. But then at Guild, I got a 1 at that same thing. It was a big there Chopin piece. It was monstrous, and the judge said it... at state piano contest, I think this piece is too big for you, which you can't tell a 17-year-old girl that.
Mm-hmm.
What? Tell me what I can't do.
Yeah. And was Guild after that then?
Yeah, it was after.
So did you learn from the 3 to get the great score at Guild?
I just wasn't nervous for that one because I had been doing it since second grade.
Yeah.
Whereas the state piano contest, I knew that judge was a really, really tough one. And I don't know what, for whatever reason, it got in my head. So
oh,
happens
my.
To the worst, best. Best in the
best,
worst of us.
Yeah. But there's always learning experiences.
Uh-huh.
And speaking of learning then, so Matt, how do you, you know, quote unquote, just pick up the basics of a particular instrument enough to be able to carry it off?
Before YouTube, how did you do that?
Yeah, I, you know, honestly, some of it I am able to draw back on some of the education that I had as an instrumental education major. So there are some things that it's like, well, I know the basic theories, and it's just a matter of refiguring some things out. In other cases, it has been, I mean, just like every, you know, almost every guitar player that you know just picked up the guitar and had to fumble through and figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been true for me on a lot of these instruments as well. And the nice thing, the thing that sometimes I think hampers me is the music theory background. Because I can apply a lot of what I know to a variety of instruments to sort of figure my way out. Through things. The problem is that because I know the theory, I don't always trust my ears enough to intuit my way through an instrument. And so sometimes it's the thing that keeps the keeps the wheels on the bus, and sometimes it's the thing that gets in my way of probably being a little more exploratory than what I allow myself to be.
So which one of you is the lyricist and which one is the composer?
It's all Matt. I don't.
I have the feeling not.
I like to fine tune things. He does the hard work of making it up, and then we work on it together. So
yeah, we've co-written a few things, but usually if I write something, it's oftentimes it happens in a single shot, or the bare essentials are there, and I just need to circle back to grab one other piece, maybe a chorus, or maybe just text for a section, but we have co-written a few things, and but for me, a lot of times too, the inspiration to write will come on a bike ride, or will come at a time where I'm isolated anyway, and we can't really co-write if we're not together. So a lot of times I'll even if I will take the credit for writing it, Amy certainly is the litmus test for whether it's worth us spending any time with or not.
So when you get an image in your head as to what a song should be lyrically, do you text her? Or do you wait?
No,
I usually wait.
He holds it all inside. He doesn't tell me anything.
Well, part of it is I'm somewhat of a perfectionist, and so I fight to find just the right words. And it's like, until I know what it is that I want to say, sometimes it's hard for me to get it out. And to share kind of a rough draft version of a song would feel really vulnerable for me, because it's like, well, what if the part that I really kind of like and am planning on building on is the piece that she doesn't respond to?
It's better not to know.
If I'm not mistaken, Luke Tatchy and Nick put this together, correct? For
yeah.
the virtual Christmas in July.
Yep.
When they gave you those two songs with the public domain, or did they just let you have free reign to begin with?
Those are the two.
They chose those, okay. So what did they say about them?
Pretty much what Luke told us was, just do what you do.
Looking forward to see what you come up with, I think is what I heard.
And so far he's seen one of the songs, and I don't think he regrets it yet.
No,
so.
He said the first one was hashtag couple goals. We were really cute. So.
Fantastic. And so what do you guys enjoy about this type of format? You know, it being virtual, putting together your own thing, and then it's going to be sliced and diced a little bit in some editing. But what do you think of the format of this?
Well, of course, live performance has so much. There's an energy that comes from the audience, and so that piece is missing. But we actually did a pre-recorded wedding on Saturday. I mean, the wedding was on Saturday, but we pre-recorded a bunch of music for the wedding, and it was nice to be able to actually work and perfect a few things that we would have just let slide in my performance, maybe. Although it was a little aggravating too, because we realized we didn't actually know one of the songs as well as we thought we did. So what do I like about it? I like that we can make it better, and I like that we can, you know, fine tune and stuff. I think we can be really creative with this format. There's a lot of fun things that you can do, and I think it's definitely challenged us to find creativity in different ways.
Yeah, and there's, for me, I think there's really two things that I love about it. The first one is that it allows you to collaborate on a different kind of level, because we're pulling in. Goodnight Theater Collective has such a wide variety of guest artists that they use over the course of a season, and to be able to have something where it's like we can call the majority of the people that we've worked with, and even if they're not still in the area, we might actually be able to reach out and still have them contribute in one way or another, which is really cool. I mean, that's one of the things that I think it really benefits. The other thing that I love is that. Is that broader reach. We don't have to be gathered in one room at one time, and there's obviously something special that happens in that one room at that one time, but this is actually an opportunity for us to have a show in front of people that may never set foot in, or may not have, right, had they not seen something online and really enjoyed it. And so my hope is that it is enjoyable. I know it will be, but that it allows a local theater company like Goodnight Theater Collective to gain an audience and find some folks that wouldn't have found them otherwise.
Yeah, and you two do have experience with them. Seen you a few times, and especially Christmas time was so enjoyable. Matt was in the cabaret, and you were in the wonderful production of
It's a Wonderful Life. Yes.
Pat in my heart right now. Oh, my goodness gracious. And so just kind of, for those that weren't there, give us a revamp of what it was like to do that, because that particular show was different than the cabarets and so forth.
So that was really fun for me, because I was kind of given the role of making all of the sound effects. So I was what they call a Foley operator. So I was given the role of making all the sound effects, but also because it's visual, you have to keep it as much kind of vintage as you can, because it was supposedly set in the 40s. And so you're making it with buckets and with pencils,
right,
and with, just whatever you can. And then I also underscored the story with I would play the organ or the piano. We didn't do that vintage. It was a keyboard that I just switched back and forth.
Shh, we won't tell.
And then at the
we'll very, swear on it.
Yeah, and then we did some pre-show music and some intermission music or whatever, and so got to play and sing some of those things. And then at the very, very end, I pulled out my accordion and got to be Berthy, and I get to do some of the voices too. And so that was really fun to be able to do some of the silly voices. And there were one, two, three, six of us, I believe, and we covered all of the vocal, all of the roles in It's a Wonderful Life. It's over 100 roles, I think. And so Nick was the MVP in that one, but also, some of the others of us also covered.
Oh, great cast.
Yeah, it was so fun. And then you just change your voice, and you maybe put on a different hat or a different prop or something, and you become another person, so that you get the double whammy of the radio show sound, but also for your live audience who's watching it happen. It was really fun.
What kind of research did you do when it came to the sound effect part?
Well, YouTube, and
God bless YouTube.
Yeah, I know. I learned how to do everything from it, and so that I did. I did some online research. I did. I just tried stuff out. The crickets. There was supposed to be the sound of crickets, and it was recommended in the script that you scrape your thumb on combs. Well, that doesn't sound like crickets at all. It sounds like. It just doesn't sound right. And so I would try and find the most brittle combs, and then I was jingling my head. I had Christmas earrings on, and they had teeny tiny little bells on them. And I realized they sounded like crickets. And so I got my earrings out and I jingled them and I kind of did the combs and it somehow, anyway, so that one was really fun to come up with. The splashing in the water was an interesting challenge because, of course, you're on stage with all this electronic equipment. We had a large garbage can with a towel underneath of it, and then the bucket inside of it, what you're supposed to do is fill it up and turn it over, and when you pull it up upside down, it makes a nice sploosh sound, just like as if someone was landing in the water, so you don't hear the kabunk. Yeah, anyway, so... I learned a lot. It was really fun, but mostly it was just trying stuff.
And then, Matt, when it came to the cabaret last December, you had some of those multi-instruments out.
Yeah, I got to... We did a little bit of change up from what we had originally planned with the cabaret. There was one particular song that we couldn't find, a good backing track for. And so Janice, who was in the show, went ahead and played acoustic. She's actually a much better acoustic guitar player than I am. And I was able to then add just a little bit of acoustic bass underneath that. And so we kind of made it this little intimate moment in the middle of this show that is full of just all kinds of fun and, holiday jolly kind of merriment. To have kind of that intimate moment where, three artists, no track, and just to be able to create that moment in the middle of all of that was really kind of special.
What's it take to be a creative mind in music?
Man, I think sometimes it's a lot of it is instinctual and kind of having a sense of, this might be interesting to try out. The willingness to try things out. The nice thing for us with Two White Squares is we'll bring 8 to 10 instruments to a two-person show, and we intend to use everything that we bring. We don't pack anything for set dressing because there's just not enough room. And but we have the opportunity then beforehand to sort of imagine, well, what could this sound like? What could a song like Money for Nothing sound like with accordion covering the guitar part and an acoustic bass and foot percussion?
That was all my idea, by the way.
Yeah.
And did you say foot percussion?
Yeah. So bass drum and a tambourine pedal.
Yep. Gotcha.
Yeah. Or we've done some other ones where it's, we'll have this idea that we've heard the song done this way. What if we did it this way? And if we did it more in this style, it might lend itself to some different instrumentation. And so we have a little bit of fun, and we'll always test drive that stuff at home and work all the kinks out. And
of course, yeah.
Try to make sure that it's. That it's working before we would ever play it in public. But
I think probably the foundation is, of course, getting the training. I mean, I've taken...
Well,
I've
either getting the training or doing the practice.
Right.
Because there's a lot of musicians that do that.
You got to build your skill is the point. And so you can have a creative mind, but if you don't have the skill to be able to pull it off. And I've been doing, singing and playing for so long, sometimes it's easy to forget that not everybody knows this stuff, And so it's good to always be... always be learning. That's something that I continue to do is I'm always learning new things. I'm learning new instruments. I'm learning new software. I'm learning new techniques for teaching. I'm always learning new things, but also just appreciating kind of that foundation that it was built on. And thankful. My mother is known for saying behind every successful child is a pushy mother. And I asked her one time, how did you keep me in piano lessons through those rough years when I would cry through the lessons and I hated to practice and all of that? And she says, there's just some things a mom's got to make a kid do. So there you go. There she's a lot of the inspiration behind why I got a foundation in the first place.
Yep. So do we have a studio in the house? Or are all the instruments in different places? You think grand piano, you kind of think of a nice setting.
Okay, so I do teach voice out of my home, and so I have a grand piano, and that is the front room of our home. And so, yes, it's just the piano's room. It is not a living room. Mm-hmm. It is a music room. And so my students just come as far as that front room. And then our house is not very large. It is a little bungalow-sized house. And then down in the basement, we have a refinished basement. And that's where the rest of the instruments live.
Okay.
And currently...
usually they live in storage. And we have half of the basement that's set up as a family room, you know, a couch and a couple of chairs, entertainment center, that kind of stuff. And then the other half is usually just a dining room and a dining room table and a mm-hmm. and a wet bar. But when we need to practice, when we need to record, we pull the dining room table out. It's one that breaks down, you know, take a few leaves out, break it down, set stuff up, and we're able to do what we need to do. And it's been set up because our church is not meeting in person for worship yet, and because our kids also play instruments, we have a four-piece band living in the house. And so we've been pre-recording the songs for our contemporary service for the last 3+ months now. And we've set up a studio space with a black curtain, some uplighting, our sound system, and the whole shoot and match. And it's been set up for 3 months straight now.
It makes him crazy. He can't quite handle it. But it is what it is. And it's
the,
all
the perfectionist slash neat freak.
Temporary.
Oh, right, yeah.
I'm not a neat freak. But
So how old are the kids, and what types of instruments do they play? Are they going to become multi-instrumental like the both of you?
So our son Xander is going to be a junior at DSU, and he's majoring in audio production. He is a super handy guy to have around right now.
Yes, he would
so
be.
So he makes us sound good, and it's really awesome to have him around. He also plays drums for us.
Okay.
And then our daughter is kind of following in that multi-instrumental phase. Let's see. Her first instrument was harp.
Wow.
Right.
Quite the choice.
Yes. And yes, exactly. This says a little bit about her. And so she started on harp in the third grade and played until eighth grade, and then gave it up when she got to high school. And she plays the piano and she plays bass. She is a junior she'll be a junior at Lincoln High School, and she plays bass and jazz too. And so jazz bass is kind of her thing. That's mm-hmm. what she really, really loves. She also...
With a stand-up then?
No.
Or she's doing electric. Uh-huh. Okay.
She also does flute. She plays flute in the concert band at Lincoln. And she is in the color guard in the marching band. So it's not an instrument, but it's still a lot of commitment.
No doubt.
And she tinkers around on guitar and ukulele.
She just sits upstairs and she sings like an angel. And she sits upstairs and she, you know, she just learns stuff. She's like, hey, I heard this on TikTok and I just figured it out. I'm like, well, look at you go.
Yeah.
So it's kind of one of those leave the instruments around and she'll learn to play them kind
of
situation.
Yeah, so you're not to parents that say, don't play with my stuff.
Oh, no.
Right.
You want to play with our stuff? Let me get you your own stuff.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
All right, we are speaking with two white squares. They are Amy and Matt Morrison, and we're going to be back with more of them in just a moment.
Ladies, when it's time to give your nails some love, get that extra special treatment from Quality Nails on South Minnesota Avenue in Sioux Falls. Manicures and pedicures that look great and make you feel fantastic. Zaya and Tony provide professional care for your hands and feet, whether you just want the basics or an extra special look with added flair. Oh, and guys, it's okay to treat yourself, too. Quality Nails. Call for an appointment. 605-334-1463.
Dr. Perry Langston and Dr. Corey Tootie provide the very best chiropractic care to Sioux Falls. At XL Chiropractic, the focus is to improve your overall health in spirit, body, mind, and will, relieving your pain and helping you in your wellness goals. Discover how to get results the natural way. 605-332-9235. Or xlchiros.com. That's excelchiros.com. XL Chiropractic, excellent care for excellent people.
We are having just a great time. But by the way, thank you to Woodgrain Brewery. This is where we are recording this week's episode of the Dave Holly Hour. I'm Dave Holly. It's Amy and Matt, the Morrisons, the two white pegs.
Squares.
I knew I did it. I wanted to say at one time square pegs because I remember,
right.
You know,
yeah.
It was a very
yep.
short-lived
yes,
series
was.
On CBS,
yes,
but I remembered that.
Right after The Facts of Life, if I remember correctly.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Because they were inextricably linked in my brain right there.
We can go back to that retro stuff, no doubt about it. All right, so Amy, let's talk types of music. I want to hear your take on... What makes Amy Morrison go?
Okay.
Ooh, that is great.
What makes me go? Okay, well, I'm classically trained, and mm-hmm. so I actually do sing in an opera company here, the South Dakota Opera South Dakota, I believe we're called. I should know, I'm the graphic designer too.
Is it Opera South Dakota or Opera Sioux Falls?
No, it's South Dakota.
South Dakota, okay.
Anyway, yeah, don't check our website. It's terribly out of date. And that's my fault. Yeah, so I do that. My favorite, I don't think of myself as really an opera singer because I don't know. I'm just not that serious. But my favorite operas to do are fairy tale operas in the park. And so this year we got canceled, of course. But for the last, we've been in existence for 13 years and I've been in 12. Not the very first one, but afterwards I was like, I need to be a part of this. And so I've been a little pig and a billy goat and a Carmenella
and Pinocchio.
Pinocchio.
A real boy.
That was a year I didn't have any hair. It was great. So that's kind of a fun thing. I love musical theater. My favorite role and probably most fitting role was Mary Poppins. And so I played that in Mitchell. And that was a great boon for me. I am worship leader with Matt. We lead worship together at our church, Asbury United Methodist. And so we've been doing that since we got out of college. I actually studied for my master's degree, studied choral conducting. I don't use that degree, but I have one. And that, therefore, I can teach at school. I love the classics. I like a lot of things. I like musical theater and some pop songs. I like really kind of light, easygoing pop songs. I'm not like a loud, belty kind of person. I mean, I can appreciate it, but I can't do it. And I like to listen at Christmas time, especially. I like to listen to some nice jazz. And some jazz seems self-indulgent on the part of the musician, and I get bored and lost. So,
so non-self-indulgent Christmas jazz.
Yes.
Now I know what to get you for Christmas.
Okay. So yes. you can look up that Spotify playlist.
Yeah. That's what I pay $9.99 a month for. $10.64 with tax. All right, Matt. So what about you?
Yeah, I grew up listening to Top 40 radio. Loved a variety of stuff from that. Of course, it was during the 80s, and some was of higher quality than others. I enjoyed it all, though.
True.
But it really wasn't until junior high when I first started getting into jazz that I really, all of a sudden, it honestly lit me up. And, beginning to dig into guys like Wynton Marsalis and then Miles Davis and Charlie Parker and Louis, I got to the point where honestly I would have been, my dream job coming out of high school would have been to be a jazz historian. Because I just loved it. And the whole gamut of it. And so that was really my gateway drug into a life of music. And then going through college, when I got to undergrad, I recognized I wasn't the best at any particular thing as a trumpet player. I never had the best range. I never had the best technique. I was never the greatest improviser, but I was really adaptable, and I found that was really my strength as a musician. And so then when I got to grad school, I was really again pretty broad based, but at a school that required a little more specialization. And really what I found was the style that suited me best was orchestral music, because orchestral music is all about being able to play a different style. And when you're talking about a piece that was written in the 1700s versus something written in the 1900s, there's a pretty drastic difference in how you approach those pieces. And I found that actually that was a place where the technique didn't get in my way, the range didn't get in my way, the improvisation wasn't even a question. But the ability to adapt to different styles just really suited me.
Who was your inspiration as a trumpet player?
Ooh, oh man. Yeah, I mean the ones that I've mentioned already would certainly be up there.
Qualify,
yeah,
yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean Wynton was kind of the best of both worlds in terms of being a young trumpet player and trying to not only find a foothold, a toehold in jazz, but then also someone who could play classical. I could listen to the same artist playing different styles and see just high degree of artistry on both sides. Miles was always interesting to me because he was never the most technical player, but he just had this gorgeous tone. And he, again, was one of those guys that could just adapt. And, you know, you hear him playing stuff with Charlie Parker versus what he was playing in the 80s towards the end of his life, where he's doing more electronic and jazz fusion and stuff like that. It's like, how do you make that bridge and still be as relevant to the conversation as that guy was? I mean, that was just fantastic. So those guys certainly, you know, I'd throw also Clifford Brown, Lee Morgan, Chet Baker, both as a trumpet player and as a jazz vocalist. You know, he might actually be the prototype of what I would have wanted to be as a jazz musician. If I were to go back and say, if I could pattern my style off of someone, Chet might just be the guy.
You know, the thing about jazz that so many people forget, it's the only true American music form. And I loved playing jazz too when I was in elementary school, middle school, and high school. And I've told this story so many times, and I hope that listeners to this show never get sick of it, but it's just it's such a meaningful part to me. A few days before my high school band teacher passed away, he was in the hospital here in Sioux Falls, went up to see him. They had just done a biopsy on the inside of his mouth that day, so it's filled with gauze and so forth. He can't speak. And so I told him, I said, I really want to tell you two things. I said, anytime anybody has ever found out that I've been in radio, they all ask the same question. What's your favorite music? And I said, my answer has never wavered. Good.
Yes.
And I said, I thank you for that. I didn't grow up in the big band era, but I love big band because you had us play that. And all these different styles, such an appreciation for good music. And so it doesn't matter what genre it comes from if it's good. Yeah. And I really thank him for that. And I said, the other thing is, you know, any high school memorabilia, you know, letterman's jacket, medals, certificates, all that stuff, long gone. I said, but there's one thing that will always be in my home. I said, that's the 1981 Louis Armstrong Jazz Award that you gave me as a senior. So I tell that story a lot, but it's just so meaningful. And
yeah.
So what types of teachers, obviously, you know, mom gave you a little push.
Yeah.
But what types of music teachers did you have?
Well, my first and biggest influence as a kid was my piano teacher. She was Mrs. Postma, and then got married, and she was Mrs. Gruis. She was insane. She's still alive. We celebrated her 90th birthday, I believe, just not too long ago. I think they had to force her to retire from the church as the organist. If I'm not mistaken, she taught 80 students a week. She also taught part-time at a school. She did not live in the town that she taught in at the school. And then when she got married, so she lived in Sheldon when I first knew her, but she taught in Lamar's. Mm-hmm. And then when she got married, her husband was a farmer in Worthington. But she kept her house in Sheldon. I don't think she kept her job in Lamar's. I think she had retired by that time. But she was just had more energy and more talent and was so able
and dedication,
to,
obviously.
And obviously dedication. She just loved doing what she does. And she was able to draw out the best in people. I could always hear it in her students when I was a kid. I'd be like, oh, that's one of Lois's. And so she not only taught me how to play the piano, but picked up pretty quickly also that I was a singer. And she's like, well, why don't we go to Guild Festival with some musical theater too. So from the time I was in second grade on, I started performing in front of people and dressing up in costumes and just doing the thing and being judged and
well,
all of that.
Let's ask about this though. I mean, you say dressing up in costumes. You have a pretty flavorful wardrobe to begin with. Was it really a stretch to do that?
Well, you know, you got to start somewhere. yeah, those were the late 70s, and nothing was beautiful. I'm just going to say. Yeah.
Trust me. When I was in seventh grade, I had a pair of Coca-Cola pants.
Nice.
long before there was ever such a thing as Zubas or Under Armour or anything like that. Yeah, strange.
So Lois was a huge influence on me. And then, you know, of course, our elementary school teachers and our middle school teachers, our high school directors, both of us, we had the same teachers, so we're going to say a lot of the same influences. But our high school band director, Mr. Nagel, and our high school choir director, Mr. Dighton. We had a very talented crop of kids in our age group.
Yeah. And Mr. Stevens at the middle school level,
oh, yeah,
too, was mm-hmm. a great encouragement. It was yeah. just his birthday the other day, and okay. we're still in touch, and it's yeah, yeah it's great to
yeah
to be able to thank these guys, you know, even all these years later.
Right.
Whenever we see him. Mr. Stevens, our middle school teacher, tricked me into playing the bassoon. I started out as a flute player and played for 2 years, and then in about seventh grade, he's like, we need some double reed players. And I was thinking, you know, it's that long, skinny thing that looks mm-hmm. like a clarinet, right? That's what I want, whatever that is. I'll do it, you know. And he knew, I think, that I knew how to read bass clef because I was a piano player already.
Right.
But also, there's a personality that goes with the bassoon player. And so the other two girls that showed up both got an oboe reed, and I got a bassoon reed and this big long thing attached, and I've been playing ever since.
Wow.
So, and I'm pretty sure those other two girls don't play their oboes.
By the way, do you have insurance on all this?
We should.
Should be covered under homeowners.
Okay, good. I was thinking, man, you guys would have a lot of things to replace if you had to do that.
Yes, responsible grown-up things are not our forte. So.
But I have pictures of all the serial numbers.
Oh, there's well that. Done.
Yes. Ooh, I did that before we made our last move. I made sure to do that because it's like, this is a good opportunity.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, very good thinking because, you know, well, you can tell by this array of equipment that, you know, I have one of those problems, too, of buying things that help me out with my little hobbies and so
yeah,
forth.
You accumulate a lot of stuff over time.
Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right. So any other people that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, I mean, I
oh, wait. I got to say, Dr. Frank Aiello is my voice teacher at USD. It was a huge influence on me. I had him my senior year in high school, and then I was in college for 5 years. So I had him for 6 years as a voice teacher, and he really taught me everything I know about the way I sing and the way I teach. There.
Yeah.
Now.
And for me, you know, I'd point to Rolf Olson, who was at USD's at Northern State now. As a trumpet player, I actually got my master's in trumpet performance, which you'd never know by hearing me play now because I don't play often enough. And Bill Fund was my teacher out there, and just he was honestly the first teacher that I had that not only was he a phenomenal player and he challenged, pushed. So he was really sometimes difficult to be in the studio with, not because of his personality, but because I just could not quite get where he was trying to take me to. But he was also the first teacher that that gave me permission to consider myself as something more than a trumpet player, and really just encouraged me. He said, you know, I don't know what Matt's going to be doing after he finishes college, but, you know, I want Matt to be successful in whatever it is, and I want him to enjoy life, and I want him to have a successful life. And you know, when we began to relate, or when mm-hmm. when I began to act as, you know, live into that which he laid out for me, it really made a huge difference, and I was able to relax a lot more. And I really honestly think that it was something that really helped to pave the way for me to consider doing something else with my life other than being a studio brass teacher at the college level, because that's pretty much what you did with that degree.
Right. Where was grad school?
Northern Colorado.
Ah.
Yeah.
I worked in Greeley back in 85 and 86 at KFKA.
Nice.
Oh, my. I tell you what, we are having a great time speaking with two white squares.
We couldn't be more white, and we couldn't be more square. It's just the way it is.
Now, what brought that about, the name for the two of you as a duo?
We put out...
yeah, we tried to crowdsource it.
We tried to crowdsource, yes, and...
And so many of our friends know us more from church circles that they were mm-hmm. coming up with every bad cliche Christian band name that you could possibly ask for, which we were never going
to
use.
Yeah, basically we said no to everyone's ideas except for Rob's, right?
Yep.
And Rob's idea was like, you should be like the White Stripes, but be like the White Squares. And we changed it to
there
two white
go.
Squares, and there it
love
is.
Love it. So. It's fun. That's a great thing to have. Yeah,
if we were going to be a White Stripes cover band, then I could see us being the White Squares, because we would be definitely at a different, we would have to take a different approach.
We could cover than Jack and Meg. Stripes. I only know that one song.
When it comes to learning songs and for the types of songs, obviously, you know, you're going to have the things that you collaborate on, compose, etc., for something like Good Night Theater. Then, you know, when it comes to you being in the opera, you've got something you have to go with. But when it comes to putting together a two-person band and going out and getting some gigs and making a little extra cash, what do you have to do to make that a success?
Well, you got to gather some sound equipment. That we learned right away. And we had to put together a two-hour set. That's a lot of music to learn. And then actually it's evolved to over 3 hours at this point. Because that's what they'll ask for is, well, can you play for 3 hours? That's a lot of time to play. And so we don't have our music generally memorized, even though we've been doing a lot of the same songs for several years now. But you just flip through it, and you always do it in the same order. What we discovered is because we have so many instruments, the transitions are vital. Because Matt will retune or something if he changes tuning and stuff. And so usually we go off of, like, what capo is he on? Where do we need to be? You know, what instrument is he playing? And then I switch back and forth faster than he does. So, yeah, but we had to figure out some good transitions. We've learned some songs don't follow others very well.
And, well, and I think too, you know, there's a mix between, you know, doing, for me anyway, I don't necessarily want to do all covers of stuff that everybody knows.
Right.
But I want to do stuff that people know because they're going to, because that's the thing that's going to, they're going to perk up. And that's going to grab their attention. But of course, when we do it, we're going to do it probably in a little different way than what they're expecting. You know, whether it's again, you know, walking on sunshine with acoustic guitar and accordion instead of the brass, or something like Chasing Cars, where we do it more bowed cello and acoustic, much more relaxed and laid back. And you know, even the songs that we do that are more familiar, we try to do in a different way. And then we've got quite a few covers that we do that are songs that. That are really kind of undiscovered gems, you know, things that we've come across over time that it's like, we love this song, we connect with this song, and I think an audience would connect with it too if it ever got in front of them. And then, you know, we throw in a handful of originals in the midst of all of that too, and hopefully we get the flow right to where it's a good mix of more energetic, more introspective stuff people know, stuff people don't know. And to where, you know, if you're there for an hour, hopefully you've heard a variety of things and you found a few things that you've really enjoyed in the midst of there that you just weren't expecting.
When we first started out, it was like, what are we gonna learn? And so we would start listening, and he would come up with some. He'd be like, hey, what do you think of this song? And, you know, I would. And so I would just throw my Pandora station on with an artist that I would like, and I'd just sort of let it start there. And every time a new song would come up and I'd be like, ooh, we could do this, I would screenshot it and make him listen to it, because I can't remember them. But I can go back and look at the screenshot. But, yeah, so we just collected songs over time. It took a while.
And there were some that worked and some that didn't.
Yep. Right. As in with everything, right?
Yeah. Yep.
What's rehearsal time like for you guys throughout a week? Or?
Almost non-existent right now, especially. But yeah.
When things are cooking.
Yeah, when we have things going on, typically, honestly, some of the stuff we've played enough to where it's like, you know, maybe one brush-up rehearsal with a lot of stuff and we'll be okay. If we're learning some new stuff, it's like, you know, we're going to want to set aside a little bit of time and kind of work through some things and test some stuff out.
Matt always says that the reason that he wanted to start this band in the first place, and it was his idea, the reason he wanted to start this band in the first place is that we were both playing so much music and being at rehearsals for other people, and we were never
together.
Why don't we do it together?
Yeah. And not only that, but we were always playing stuff that other people wanted to do, and it was always fun stuff, and you know, we always, those were great environments for us to be in, but it's like, wouldn't it be nice for us to be able to do something that we actually wanted to do?
Yeah.
Something that really spoke to who we are.
Right.
And,
musically.
You know, like, even, you know, my voice won't be tired after a two-hour set of playing this, because it's stuff that fits my voice well, because I picked it, you know? And that's not always the same with every situation.
Versus when I have to go up and sing Paradise by the Dashboard Lights at the end of karaoke, and it's thrashed.
Yeah.
So, but you've saved it all for that moment.
Well, true. I do try to put it in the right order, so then it's like, okay, I'm toast now. But... Let's go with that question. If you sing karaoke, what's the go-to song?
Oh, man. My go-tos are going to be anything that I know I can, like, knock out of the park, which are very few things that anyone's going to have in a karaoke set. You know, anything Sinatra, Harry Connick Jr.
Sinatra, yes.
Yeah. You know, anything in the crooners where it's like, I know the arrangement well enough to be able to do that. Those are certainly good ones. I've discovered a few more in having to do auditions because I hadn't done theater stuff forever until a year and a half ago. That was the first show that I had done in 27 years.
Yeah.
And so I had to work up some audition material for that. So, you know, things like Sweet Pea, which is one that we do regularly, but that fits kind of more that, you know, pseudo swing jazz, light, easy kind of feel.
The easy answer is do one of the songs we already do.
Do.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, because you already know how it goes. It's so.
Oh, my number one right now, though, Kissing a Fool, George Michael.
Excellent.
Yes, because it. Range-wise, it's spot on for me, and yes, that's one that's like, if I only get one shot, and they've got that in the rotation, that's what I'm going with.
There you go. How about you, Amy?
I don't have one. It's so funny.
Give me the book and let me find one.
Yeah, one of my friends pointed out, he's a Russell Svenningson, a voice teacher over at Augustana. I think he said, this is like a nightmare for a trained vocalist. What do you mean?
Right.
You want me to walk in and not rehearse it and not know the arrangement and just sing it cold? That's like, because there's pressure on you. I don't necessarily have, for a while, I would be like, for sure go with low stuff, but for whatever reason my low range is going kaput as I get older, which isn't normal, but whatever, why be normal? And so I don't know, but my daughter and I did do Adele's it was something by Adele. And there's ooh, that one that's got the ooh.
Oh, sure.
Da 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 da, uses of it.
And you know. And thankfully, you don't have to worry about that rendition coming up on copyright hits at all.
True.
You know
that one.
All right, final question for each of you. We'll start with you, Amy. Two-parter. Who else do you like to go see or take in as entertainment? And then hobbies, if you have time for them.
Sure. I love local theater. I just love it. I love going to plays. I love going to musicals. That is probably my favorite thing to do. And so it's always fun because I almost always know somebody on the stage. And so I just love local theater. And then I do have hobbies. I sew. Sometimes I like to make weird clothes instead of just buy them. And I, well, lately my hobby has been learning how to edit video, but that's fun too. I'm a hobby bassoonist and a hobby celloist, and I try to learn something new every day. Mm-hmm. I listen to a lot of podcasts. I've been listening to a lot on racial reconciliation right now. I'm a lifelong learner.
Excellent.
So that's my hobby.
Matt?
Yeah, so in terms of live performance, I mean, it's, again, pretty much anything that we can make it to, anything that fits in our schedule, whether it's, you know, local theater companies, obviously, you're always going to find us at a Good Night Theater show. You're almost always going to find us at Sioux Empire Theater stuff. If we're lucky enough to score tickets to things at the Pavilion,
right.
Which last year was like a boon year for us on.
I think we went to four of them.
Yeah,
season,
yeah, and it was, yeah. We have very gracious, generous friends who think of us when they can't use their tickets. So all of those things, you know, we've loved being able to support Improv Falls and when Zach, our mutual friend Zach Dresch, did his first hour-long headlining set at Bosses. I was there for that too. So I love that scene as well. And you know, we'll try to catch as many of our friends playing at as many venues in town. As we can, partly to support the friends, partly to support the venues, because
right.
there's, you know, the more live music, the more live entertainment that there is going on in town, the more all of us benefit.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Hobbies.
Hobbies. Man, what do I have time for right now?
You're a cyclist.
Yeah, I'm a cyclist. That's something I started in junior high, and I've even spent some time working in bike shops and that kind of stuff. So right now, my therapy time is me working on bikes. But I do ride them occasionally too. So that's, and I've been passionate about cycling for forever. So that's a big one. Obviously music stuff. And then probably if I was going to claim one other thing that takes up a lot of my time, it's looking after my cat, Monica LaWhiskers.
Monica LaWhiskers. In ode to that handlebar?
Well, yeah, she was a cat that somehow stumbled into our lives. That she was actually in the engine block of a friend's car when they came to our place for a house show for another artist that was playing.
Cold, cold winter night.
And cat was maybe 6-8 weeks old at the time, and it was pretty obvious pretty quick that the cat was staying with us because the girl whose car it was in, her mom was deathly allergic, so it wasn't going home with her. Mm-hmm. The kids wanted to name her Mo for Motor Kitty because she was found in the engine. I said, we needed to do something better. We need to find something more creative.
A proper Christian name.
Monica LaWhiskers. There we are.
We get good giggles out of that.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, it's been such a pleasure. We got to giggle a lot recording this, and that always makes me happy. And anytime I see you two on stage anymore, that also makes me happy. And thank you for being a part of what is now becoming such a great community of arts and entertainment here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah.
And we'll be back to wrap things up in just a moment.
Hey, I'm Zach Tresh, and I love Books and Brews Pizza. So does my friend Dave. In fact, the latest pizza on the Books and Brews Pizzeria menu is called The Podcaster, inspired by Dave. Now you have a chance to win pizza with a podcaster. Go to DaveHollyHour.com, go to the contact page and send an email. Put pizza with a podcaster in the subject line. Then in the comments, tell them what your favorite episode was, or maybe even who your favorite guest has been. You could even say, Zach Dresch, since I've been on a couple of times. Then the first show each month, Dave will draw a winner for pizza with a podcaster. Yeah, that means Dave will be there with you and maybe even your favorite guest, like Zach Dresch. Enter as often as you like. Remember, DaveHollyHour.com, contact, email, pizza with a podcaster in the subject line, and show faves in the message. After all, Books and Brews is the original Dave's fave. Pizza with a podcaster, brought to you by Books and Brews Pizzeria, downtown Sioux Falls.
From the Dipsy Doodle Studios at the world headquarters of Big D Entertainment, a 40-square-foot home studio in the middle of America, it's Dave Holly.
Thank you, Zach, and thank you, listeners, for being here and being so ding-dang good to me and making me feel that I'm at least providing you a service that maybe you can occasionally chuckle, laugh, or guffaw, or learn something interesting about some incredible artists that we have in this town, whether it be visual artists, whether it be musical artists, whether it be people that write for a living, dance. We'd like to pass them all along to you. And I don't just mean in this town. I mean in the greater Sioux Empire as well. So thank you for that. And of course, thank you to Woodgrain Brewery for allowing us to record there Monday night with Matt and Amy Morrison, Two White Squares. Enjoyed that tremendously. Plus, then they had the open mic, the first one for our local comedians in quite some time. So congratulations on that. And tonight, we're going to be headed to our wine bar for some jazz. And then tomorrow night, the ruggedly handsome host returns to the Sky Lounge for some Harry Potter trivia. Hope to see you there. The rest of the weekend, that's three lovely letters, TBD, to be determined. But I know one thing that's happening next week. We're looking forward to this. The co-hosts of Kelloland Living will be joining us here on the Dave Holly Hour. In the meantime, make sure you go to DaveHollyHour.com. Get yourself into the running for that pizza with a podcaster. And just remember, my name is Dave Holly, and for me, every day is a holiday.
The Dave Holly Hour has been brought to you by Dazzle Shows Presents, The Vaudies, and Dipsy Doodle Productions, and is produced by Big D Entertainment.
Thanks for listening.